clear information that comes across in culturally appropriate ways by trusted partners and by trusted members of communities will be another really key point in a successful vaccination campaign.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. And on this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, we'll talk about the COVID-19 vaccine and some recommendations for countering vaccine hesitancy and mitigating health disparities in minority populations. That's the subject of a new white paper from the University at Albany. Here's my conversation with Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Kate Strelley.
As we began to think about this work, we were considering the fact that we're in this very important but complicated moment in the U.S. right now when it comes to health disparities. We're in the midst of this global health crisis that's been marked by these really stark disparities. And these novel vaccines, which appear to be extremely effective, are showing immense promise. And it's also a really important moment in that national advisory committees in a lot of states are centering equity and social justice as explicit goals in their vaccine planning and policy. There's been a more explicit recognition of inequities and disparities and historical mistreatment than really at any other time in public health planning. And it's coming at this super important moment in managing a massive health crisis. And witnessing this attention to disparities is unique and really encouraging. But transforming these equity goals into like achieved outcomes on the ground is going to be no small feat, in part because of strained and distrustful relationships between some communities and government and medicine. And so there's going to be a necessity for plans and campaigns that are developed like in true partnership with communities that can do a number of things well. And key among those things that would have to be done well would be removing logistical barriers to vaccination in underserved communities, using culturally appropriate messages that can really address the specific concerns that people have about these particular vaccines, and importantly, acknowledging and addressing the historical as well as the more recent patterns of systemic racism that are responsible for the distrust of vaccination within some communities of color. And that's sort of the broad context that was really motivating our work in this area.
So you're pointing out that while we know COVID already has had a disproportionate effect on minority communities in terms of people who are A, contracting the disease, and then B, their outcomes once they do, you're saying that these dynamics were in place well before this particular pandemic.
Oh, most definitely. You know, there have been stark disparities in disease burden and life expectancy across socioeconomic group and across racial ethnic categories in this country for pretty much the entire history of our nation. It's coming to light in a new way as we face this global pandemic, but it's certainly not new to witness these types of inequities in disease outcomes or in healthcare access.
Okay, so what to do about it in terms of COVID-19?
Well, at this point, we're really focused on the vaccination. There's a whole host of things that can be done with regard to prevention, but that is somewhat outside of the scope of the work that we're doing right now. We're really interested in how to address vaccine hesitancy and mitigate potential disparities in the vaccination. And so we conducted these focus groups in August 2020 with healthcare providers serving these minority communities in multiple locations across New York State. And what we sought to understand were what are the biggest concerns of the members of the community that they serve about a COVID-19 vaccine, and what are some of the logistical and practical barriers that community members might face in getting the vaccine. And participants shared feelings of justified distrust of the government and medical institutions, so feelings that arise from like the contemporary inequities that we already discussed a little bit in our healthcare system, as well as legacies of medical abuse going back to the infamous Tuskegee experiment, as well as experimentation under slavery. On top of this history and an ongoing pattern of disparities, people also reported feeling inundated with contradictory messages about how quickly a vaccine could be developed, what sort of political influences it might be subject to. And they emphasized to us that this messaging and this confusion on top of this broader social context and history was going to take building trust from challenging to more challenging. But we also got the message from comments from many different participants that the hope here lies in early and ongoing engagement with communities that's based in partnerships, true partnerships that involve these honest and open conversations, honest and open conversations about what's known and what's not known when it comes to the vaccination and the disease, about the processes that have gone into vaccination, testing, and licensing, as well as recognition of the social justice issues that arise with the disease and with a vaccine rollout. Those were some of the key points. And so the real takeaway from our work is that making communities trusted and invested partners early in this vaccine process is going to allow for good information and well-designed plans, right? The kind of information and the kind of plans that can address communities' specific circumstances and their specific social justice contexts.
It may be too early to say, but do you see that happening?
I think we're on a good track. There's still a lot of time to see how things roll out. This vaccine campaign is an immense logistical undertaking, and it's rolling out onto this system and onto this history that's shaped by inequities. And it's going to take a lot of very thoughtful planning to preempt and to try to avoid falling into some of the potential pitfalls as something this complex rolls out onto an existing system of inequality.
I want you to say more, if you can, about the focus groups. Your white paper mentions past experiences with H1N1 a few years ago, but, you know, of course, the context going way back before that. What did you hear from these focus groups specifically about this particular vaccine and its rollout?
Well, when we conducted the focus groups in August 2020, the vaccines were not yet available and they were still being tested. The first point that was really shared is that there's a long history of this justified distrust of vaccination, particularly among African American communities, which grows out of the legacies of historical medical abuse, as I mentioned, Tuskegee, as well as experimentation under slavery. The second key point that really came out was that people need clear information, good information that lets them understand and empowers them to make choices. This has been an incredibly complex public health situation, and the vaccine development process has been incredibly complex. And it's been hard for all of us, really, to understand what's been going on in terms of getting vaccines out and which ones are coming first and the basic information about how the vaccines work, as well as the process that went into licensing and testing and side effects. And so that kind of clear information that comes across in culturally appropriate ways by trusted partners and by trusted members of communities will be another really key point a successful vaccination campaign. That was one of the second key messages that we got. Information and campaigns that are developed in collaboration with communities and delivered by trusted sources, those are key to empowering members of communities to advocate for themselves and to make choices, important choices, about vaccination.
I don't know if this is directly related to what you've studied for this particular white paper, but what about the broader phenomenon we've seen, just anti-vaccination attitudes among a rising part of the population? That might not be specific to minority groups who have their own distrust issues, but, you know, just more and more people are louder and louder about not taking any type of vaccine.
There's definitely been an increase in anti-vaccination sentiments and attitudes, and there's a lot of discussion that in many cases these may be a minority of people, and yet they're very vocal, and so it's having the capacity to shape conversations a lot. It's really important to clarify, though, that vaccine hesitancy, which is a key public health focus right now and was the focus of our work, vaccine hesitancy doesn't necessarily imply that someone's anti-vaccination. So like World Health Organization and other entities, they typically understand vaccine hesitancy to reflect a continuum. Right. Some people have very negative views toward vaccination, and I think that's what you're referring to, and this is it's not a huge group, but it's a very vocal group. Other people may have very few concerns about vaccination and may accept most vaccinations, but then there's many, many people who fall somewhere in between those two extremes. And for this large group in the middle, they can have sort of like a healthy skepticism. And there are concerns that give them pause, right? And this is a really critical group right now because we're dealing with a novel vaccine. Lots of people have a healthy skepticism and have concerns, very well grounded, and need clarification and information before they can feel comfortable taking a vaccination. Other people who fall in this kind of hesitancy continuum can face logistical barriers that delay getting vaccination, barriers in access and scheduling and convenience that disproportionately affect underserved and minority communities. But this group, you know, in the middle of the continuum, these are the folks for whom clear information that address specific concerns and distribution plans that can address the particular barriers and access that they're facing, this is the group that can most benefit from these kind of community-engaged, thoughtful partnerships that can encourage vaccination and enable people to get the vaccine if they choose to do so. So there has been an increase, definitely, in anti-vaccine attitudes, but that is one group on a continuum of vaccine hesitancy. So there's a lot of room for well-done intervention to encourage and enable people to get vaccinated.
Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but a key recommendation is clear messaging of this paper. And it occurs to me that a big part of this comes down to, you know, government competency, right? I mean, the messaging is coming top down in many cases as to when the vaccines are ready, who's going to get them when, whether they're safe. And if there is, to the extent that there's mixed messaging, a lot of that has to do with what public officials are saying, doesn't it?
Well, I think one of our key points is that when the messaging is done in partnership with communities, it becomes less top-down, and there more opportunity to craft messages that are clearer to communities, they're culturally appropriate, they're using clear language, and they're speaking to people in ways that foster communication and dialogue rather than have it being top-down. Top-down messaging, I think, has the potential for, besides, you know, the potential for being mixed and so on, just for miscommunication. And so one of our points really is to try to move away from this type of top-down messaging.
How does this paper tie in, if it does at all, with the work that the campus is doing and its president, Javedan Rodriguez, in looking at health disparities in COVID overall?
So this is a supplemental piece of work that our group did. It may inform the final report that goes to the governor's office, but it's sort of a separate but complementary piece to the work that's being done at the direction of the governor's office.
What will you be watching for specifically as this vaccine continues, seeing if your recommendations are being heeded, if the rollout is successfully reaching groups that may have been hesitant to take the vaccine, that kind of thing?
You know, it's really early still, and I think that there's a lot of information that's still yet to be gleaned. So I think it's going to be important to watch uptake of the vaccine and acceptance in different areas across the country and just to see the way that different states and areas are planning. So we mentioned in the white paper, you may recall, that there are some very interesting and promising recommendations made by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine in terms of prioritizing communities that rank high on the CDC's Social Vulnerability Index. And that index includes components of socioeconomic status, not having English as a primary language, proportion of minority residents, as well as household composition, and so on. And I think an important point to pay attention to looking forward is how partnerships may be built with communities that have those types of vulnerabilities or are facing those types of vulnerabilities.
And are the focus groups still together post-August? Is there anything that I didn't ask you about, or, you know, you didn't have a chance to mention that you would like to include here?
No, I think I just would like to highlight that I think one of the key takeaways from our work is really this necessity of dialogue and community-based development of planning and of messaging. And I think the goal of these partnerships with communities really needs to be clear information, well-designed plans that can really empower members of communities to advocate for themselves and the people in their families when they're making important decisions about vaccination.
What does that look like? Like, how does that work?
I think it can take a lot of different forms, and a number of specific suggestions have been made, and I think that they differ from area to area. One of the key points, I guess, that needs to be remembered about community engagement is that it involves engaging with specific communities facing different barriers and different concerns. And so what engagement looks like for, let's say, primarily non-English-speaking immigrant community or refugee community may be very different than what it looks like for certain African-American communities. So it has different details. But one of the key pieces of evidence that comes from this type of research, not just on COVID-19, but other vaccinations and other public health campaigns as well, is this need for partnership, but also a need for what they call multifactorial interventions. So interventions that address different, multiple different barriers at once. So addressing access and convenience, as well as trying to clarify information that will build confidence in a vaccine. And exactly what concerns people have may look different from one community to the next, which is why these dialogues and partnerships are so important. But one of the key overarching themes of interventions that have been effective is the community engagement component and the multifactorial approach that addresses multiple different aspects of vaccine hesitancy, building people's comfort or confidence in the vaccine, increasing convenience and the ability for people to access the vaccine. In some cases, it also might involve clarifying people's risk and severity for the disease, because when people feel less at risk for a disease, they're also less likely to take vaccination as an important step.
Associate Professor of Sociology, Dr. Kate Strully of the University at Albany, talking about a new white paper, Strategies to Counter COVID-19 Vaccine Hesitancy and Mitigate Health Disparities in Minority Populations. Thank you so much for taking all this time, and thanks for your work.
Thank you for taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it.
All right, that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time, I'm Ian Pickus.